Every day brings us closer to spring, but some gardeners just can't wait. This hour, we will get a jump on the season with some ideas for how to enjoy gardening even when it's freezing outside. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day. Horticulturists Richard Giron and Cindy Haynes will be here. We'll talk about indoor gardens you can visit, how to force flowering tree and shrub branches into bloom, browsing for and buying plants and seeds if you haven't already made your garden plans, and starting those seeds if you have made your plans. Richard and Cindy will also answer your questions about the plants in your life. Join the conversation after the news. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today, and spring is coming, really, but it is hard to wait, especially for gardeners. This hour, we'll talk about ways we can enjoy gardening while we wait for spring. Iowa State University Extension horticulturist Richard Giron is here. Good morning, Richard.
Good morning.
And Cindy Haynes, Associate Professor of Horticulture at Iowa State University. Hello, Cindy.
Hello.
Thank you both so much for being here today. And let's start with getting out and about. I know a lot of us have cabin fever by this time of year. So where are some of your favorite places to go to enjoy gardens in the wintertime?
In the wintertime, you actually have 5 different locations across the state to check out conservatories that are nice and kind of tropical environments where you can look at, you know, tropical plants or houseplants, 5 or 6. So that's actually a pretty nice list when you stop to think about it. One of my favorites is the Des Moines Botanical Garden in the Des Moines area near downtown Des Moines, where they have a really good amaryllis and coleus collection and a bonsai collection that you can take a look at right now. And it's a pretty nice conservatory with changing displays that's just recently been revamped. Part of the gardens around the Des Moines Botanical Center, formerly the Des Moines Botanical Center, has been redone. So it's a pretty nice place to visit.
Definitely worth a visit if you haven't been in a while, too.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And they have this weekend, I think they do have, you know, talks usually going on there. I think there's talks on chickens and worms this weekend. So that could be interesting to learn a little bit more about raising chickens and raising worms.
I figured you were feeding worms to chickens, but okay.
I think they're two separate talks. They're two separate talks.
All right.
They're not going together.
All right. I just combined the two in my mind. That's great. So where else do you like to go?
I also like Ryman Gardens, of course, here in the Ames area. This is associated with Iowa State University. It's also open daily. And I love Ryman Gardens because this is the time you want to go to that conservatory and see the butterflies. I mean, there's nothing more warming than having these butterflies kind of flirt around.
Plus,
all over
it's really warm in there with the butterflies because it has to be for
it
the butterflies.
To keep them moving, yes, it has to be.
You know, last time I took my kids to Ryman Gardens, the thing that they wanted to do for the longest was watch through the windows where you can actually see the butterflies coming out.
Yeah, the emergence cases. Yeah. Those are so cool because some of those little chrysalids and all those different things are beautiful, and they're gold, and then yes, it's pretty amazing just to kind of wander around those indoor conservatory and the butterfly flight house. And the conservatory right now still has orchids, so it's, you know, beautiful orchids, butterflies, and then you can take home an alien ornament too. So for your garden, they're selling alien ornaments, which sounds kind of fun.
Very cool. Where else?
Where else? Other places to go on either end of the state, just across the state line are a couple of other botanic gardens. The Quad Cities Botanical Center, which is in Rock Island, Illinois, also has a pretty nice conservatory. And they have a beach. They've kind of created a sand island in their sun garden right now. So kids can play in the sand and pretend like they're, you know, at a bit of a beach.
And you can pour the sand out of their snow boots. After
right.
To get done, right?
Wouldn't that be fun? Only in Iowa.
Right?
Only in Iowa. And they also have a lot of different types of bananas that are actually starting to fruit now. So that could be interesting to kind of see as well. Other end, we go to Omaha area, and the Lauritsen Gardens has a brand new conservatory. just opened in October. It's over 17,000 square feet. It's huge in comparison to some of the other conservatories. It has a Lego display, you know, the traveling Lego exhibits that were at Ryman Gardens a few years ago. They have some new ones. They're there at Lauritzen Gardens for the year, so that could be a lot of fun. And they have a lot of Lego activities throughout the winter and spring months as well. So another nice one to do. And then the final one to mention that's actually in Iowa is, I think, one of the older conservatories. There's a conservatory at Vanderveer Botanical Gardens. This is a park in Davenport. And this conservatory is not very big, but it's over 100 years old, and they have changing displays. And usually they have some nice Easter lily display for Easter. And I think they're still in their winter azalea show, which is kind of cool.
Yeah, very cool. And there's just thinking about these different places, there's also Blank Park Zoo, where if you go in, the primary attraction, of course, are the birds. But it's warm and there are plants and and also birds.
Right, so. And the Henry Dorley Zoo in Omaha as well. So another one that has some tropical plants and animals, and that's fun and entertaining. So there's actually lots of places to get your gardening fix and still stay warm.
Nice. Well, let's talk about forcing flowering tree and shrub branches into bloom, because it's too late to think about taking fall bulbs and, and forcing them. But this is something you could still do?
This is something you can do late February, early March. You can, if you can brave being outside for just a little bit. This one,
I think today you can, not yesterday.
Yeah, today you can. Go out and cut a few branches, usually about a foot to 2 foot long branches. And you're looking for things, spring blooming things, like pussy willow, forsythia, crab apples, magnolias, maybe even redbud. Some of those things, just take two or three branches off of each of those. You're going to try and take branches that aren't so noticeable. So, you know, don't run out there and just get the easiest branch and come right back. So nice branches. You're looking for ones that have larger buds, buds that are kind of swollen just a little bit. Those are usually the flower buds. You're going to bring them into a cool location and put them into a bucket or a big vase of water, warm water, and you're going to try and keep them at about 60 degrees. In a bright location for about 60 degrees for about anywhere from 2 to 4 weeks. And you'll notice that those buds will start to swell, the flowers will start to open, and at that time, that's when I usually take them out of my 5-gallon bucket and put them into a vase and bring them indoors so that I have that nice display sometime in March.
Lovely. Can you can you do it with lilacs?
You can do it with lilacs. Lilacs and red buds usually take a little bit longer, so it's going to take about 4 weeks for those to kind of do well. The forsythia and pussy willow are the easiest. So you can do it with all of these things. And that's nice when you have a collection of them, because then, you know, for the first 2 weeks, you've got forsythia blooming and you've still got the lilacs and maybe the red buds in your bucket, and you've got them blooming in late March, which
is
good.
And you said a bright location. So just next to a window, is that enough light?
That should be plenty.
Because we have all this light now.
Yes, it's nice, isn't it?
It is. I really am feeling the difference, even though it's so, so very cold.
Yes.
Now, we have talked in the past about the seed catalogs start showing up well before Christmas. So a lot of people have been browsing and looking at seeds for a long time. A lot of people have already made their purchases, but there's still time to do that as well if you haven't done that, right?
Yes, yes, there is. I haven't made all of my purchases either, so you can still do it. The problem with some of the seed catalogs is certain things will be on back order, or certain things may be less available. So the earlier, of course, you purchase those seeds, the more likely you are to get it. But if you're, you know, just looking for some new and unusual things, this is a perfect time to peruse and buy.
All right. And of course, you can also not just think about seeds, but plants, because if you order something that needs to come at a certain time, it can be delivered at that time, right?
But Richard and I are both nodding.
Oh, okay. That's very audible. Well done.
Sorry. Yes, certain things like sweet potatoes or some of these other plants that you want to maybe you want to get, they are going to arrive a little bit later when the weather or the climate is more, you know, good for them for growing. So,
so they don't freeze, basically.
Right. Yeah, so they don't
in
freeze.
In transit.
In transit, exactly. Because right. that would kill them, and we wouldn't want that.
All right, and is it time to start some of our seeds?
A few things, basically, possibly petunias, geraniums, impatiens, especially New Guinea impatiens. Those take quite some time, so you could start those maybe this weekend or next week.
All right, and if you want to start seeds and you've never done it before, it is time to go out and get your supplies, right?
Right, right.
And it's easy to spend an incredible amount of money when you go out and buy those supplies. So let's talk bare bones. What do we actually need?
Well, actually, it's not that. It doesn't have to be that expensive. Basically, you do need some containers, like some flats. They're fairly inexpensive. You could find those at garden centers. You'll need a germination medium. Jiffy Mix is the standard for that. That's readily available. You'll need your seeds. And then I would use some lights. And you really only need a standard fluorescent shop fixture. That works just fine. You don't need any expensive grow lights or anything like that. Just a standard fluorescent shop fixture and put in 240-watt bulbs.
Okay. And let's say you want to upgrade a little bit. Is there one of the extras that you enjoy with your setup that you've invested in, either one of you?
I like having a heating mat. They're a little more expensive, and some of these, you know, they range in price for home gardeners from $50 to $100. But it's this waterproof mat that you put underneath the flat that kind of keeps that soil moist, and that really, I think, makes germination happen just a little bit faster.
Well,
my grandmother would put this on top of the refrigerator or a radiator vent, those kinds of things.
Right. But,
and yeah. I put mine right in front of the furnace vent.
Right. So, but I don't have those particular locations in my house, so the heating mat actually works pretty well.
And we're going to invest in a heating mat this year because we have to start our seeds in the basement because we have way too many cats. And
yes.
It just doesn't get warm enough down there. We haven't had a lot of luck. A lot
right.
of very fragile little plants have popped up.
What you're looking for is a temperature around 70, 75 for your germination. So yeah, a cool basement's not going to work so good.
Right.
All right, we're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment to answer your questions about your seeds, about the plants in your life, places you love to go to enjoy growing things even when it's this cold outside. Give us a call, 866-780-9100, 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. With me today, Iowa State University Extension horticulturist Richard Giron and Cindy Haynes, Associate Professor of Horticulture at Iowa State. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today on Talk of Iowa, and you are welcome to join the conversation with your questions. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. With me today, Cindy Haynes. She's an associate professor of horticulture at Iowa State University and Iowa State University Extension horticulturist Richard Giron. And let's go to the phones. John is on the line in Davenport. Hi, John.
Hello.
Hi, what's your question?
Well, when we start our seedlings, our plants indoors, they always end up being long, gangly, spindly little things that most of them never make it to the outdoors.
Mm-hmm.
How do you prevent this from happening?
Well, typically, if you put them in a sunny window, they simply don't get enough sun. So as soon as they germinate, immediately put them underneath artificial lighting. And if you're using a fluorescent shop fixture, place it just a few inches above the seedlings, within maybe 2 or 3 inches, maybe 4 at most. So very, very close to the seedlings. And then leave the lights on for maybe 12 to 16 hours per day. Uh-huh. And that should help quite a bit. I also put them in, once they germinate, I also put them in a slightly cooler room. So you germinate these maybe 70, 75 degrees. If you can, move them to a slightly cooler environment, maybe around 60, 65, and that kind of slows them down too. And let them dry out a little bit. Don't keep them constantly wet. Mm-hmm. The things that make them basically tall and spindly are very warm temperatures, a lot of moisture, and not enough light.
Now, we have our growing tables down in our basement.
Mm-hmm.
And I've tried that, elevating the pots, you know, close to the light source and then gradually lowering them down.
Mm-hmm.
But I still have that problem.
Okay. Well, usually that takes care of it.
How old are your lights?
Oh, well, you know, we're constantly rotating lights. When they start doing the flickering thing, we replace them.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Sometimes, you know, we usually say with fluorescent lights, the light quality changes after about a year of continuous use. So maybe just giving them a new set of lights might mean it's more intense or brighter and less likely to have this kind of stretching potential.
Okay.
So,
and we'll give that a shot.
Maybe it's something to try.
Now, what I'd like to do, if I have the option, is to put in one cool white and one warm white tube. And I'm looking for 40-watt tubes, and that gives you a nice
spectrum
of light when you do that.
I usually have the one standard fluorescent tube, and then it's called a grow light. It looks sort of purplish. I don't know if that would be a warmer light or...
That should work fine.
Yeah, that'll have both the red and the blue kind of spectrum in it, which is great.
Okay. Well, we'll get some new bulbs and see what that does.
Have fun.
I shall. Thank you.
All right, John, thanks a lot for your call. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. Tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And let's talk about what you do when you're making the transition from indoors to outdoors with your plants. So you do have sturdy plants for planting in your garden.
Well, the first thing you want to do is when you move them outside, you want to put them in complete shade. Like on the north side of a building where they're out of the wind and in the shade, because even though they may be under light, if you put them in direct sun outdoors immediately, they're going to burn because the light intensity is so much higher in direct sun. So you put them in the shade, leave them there for a day or two, and then you gradually expose the plants to longer periods of sunlight. And so after about a week or 10 days, they're ready to go.
All right, and you want to watch out for the wind?
Yes, you do, because being Iowa, we have some very windy days in the spring. And when you bring them outside, they're pretty fragile. And so if you have a really strong windy day, or if there's a storm approaching, whatever, like a thunderstorm, you may want to bring them inside for a few hours and protect them. But you want to keep them out of the wind and the sun initially.
All right. Now, obviously, if it's going to be freezing overnight, you don't want to leave them out
there.
Right. But do you leave yours outdoors overnight, or do you feel like they're too vulnerable?
If it's going to be, let's say, above 40, they stay out. If there's any chance of a frost or freeze, they come in. But if the forecast is for temperatures of 40 or above, they stay out.
All right. You can join our conversation with your questions at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. We've got a couple of lines open for your call right now. And we do have this email from Joe at the Iowa Arboretum. He said he would love for us to let people know that there's a class tomorrow on growing fruit trees in Iowa. That's at the Iowa Arboretum, which is in Madrid, as well as a mushroom log cultivation workshop next Saturday on the 28th, iowaarboretum.org for the details. But there are actually quite a few educational opportunities for gardeners this time of year, too, right?
There are. There's a lot of pruning workshops. There are a lot of, even photography workshops. The Iowa Arboretum often does a maple tapping kind of a workshop or education. So they talk about maple syrup. So there's lots of fun things that are happening, and they're starting to gear up right about now. Other educational opportunities you should check out. A lot of master gardener groups, too, will have a symposium or a spring garden seminars. February, March, and April are the time for those to happen, too. So you can learn about a lot of things in gardening, all from the comfort of a nice, warm environment.
All right. This is a question from Amy in Des Moines. I have done seed starting for many years with both flowers and vegetables. In the past, I've been able to start nasturtiums from seed successfully, older varieties, but for the last several years, I've had no success. This is mostly with the newer dark red varieties. Last year, I tried scarifying and soaking the seeds for the first time and still no luck. Do you know what might be going on?
When she says no success, the question would be no germination or they die once they come up. As far as germination, if they soak them in water, that should help.
Mm-hmm.
That should encourage germination. If they're not coming up, then I would think for some reason the seed is not viable. If they have moisture, if they've been soaked in water, if they have the right temperature, they should germinate. So
I would also investigate to make sure something isn't eating them or digging them up. I don't know. That shouldn't be happening indoors, but sometimes that can happen. And if it's staying maybe too wet, if things are kind of rotting, that would be another thing to kind of dig around to see what's going on with the seed if it's maybe rotting because they're staying a little bit too wet.
All right. You can join our conversation. And Amy, if you want to follow up with any questions, you can give us a call. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. Tweet us at IPR Talk. Send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. This is a comment from Marie in Newton. She said, I was excited to hear your guest talk about bringing twigs inside for an early breath of spring. I grew up in Norway where birches are everywhere. Norwegian winters are even longer than Iowa winters. And forcing birch leaves and pussy willows inside is very popular. Birches bud out with beautiful, glossy, bright green, tiny leaves if you bring them inside early. I hadn't thought about forcing leaves, but that would be a nice breath of fresh air, wouldn't it?
That would be wonderful. So maybe try a couple of other things as well besides the spring blooming. Be careful in what you select, but birch would be really nice.
Yeah, no poison ivy, for example.
No poison ivy. And I think the oaks would be a little less likely to do well. So, but birches and maples might work really well.
All right. Great idea. You can give us a call again, 866-780-9100. And I have a question from one of our farthest afield listeners. This is from Monsignor Richard Sosman, who lives in Vatican City.
Oh, my.
And he listens to our podcast regularly.
Wow.
I was going to say religiously, but that's not quite the right term in this case. but he has a question for you. He says he doesn't usually listen to Hort Day because the climate is different. But he says, on my balcony, I have a tall cactus. It's 6 feet tall, given to me by some of my Roman friends. In the last couple of years, it's really bloomed. Last year, over 20 flowers from different times during the summer. Most of the time, those flowers fall off, the bulb at the base included. But last fall, one bulb remained attached to the plant. It has grown and now is bright red. Is that a fruit? Would it turn into another plant if I cut and potted it? What should he do?
That sounds like the fruit.
It does.
And I would assume there's seed inside. And I guess I would probably wait until it might begin to kind of shrivel a little bit. And that would suggest it's mature, the fruit is, and so should the seed. So at that point, they could remove the seeds and hopefully plant the seeds.
All right. And
he's got a good green thumb, I can tell you that.
In some situations, you don't want the fruit to ripen because it takes too much energy away from the plant. Is there any kind of concern there?
No, not really. No.
All right. So he can just watch and see what happens.
Right.
Wonderful.
Oh, sounds awesome.
You can give us a call, 866-780-9100, even if you're living in Rome, although email works better if you're living in Rome. Gary is on the line in Trenton, Missouri. Hi, Gary.
Hi. My question is, first of all, I know not very much about plants, but I've got, I think they call the mother-in-law's tongue.
Mm-hmm.
Their long green thing.
Right.
Okay. And I've had it quite a while. Well, it was about a month ago, and it's gone now already, but it sprouted out like one stem, not green how they start out. It came up about 2.5 feet, and the whole plant's about 2 foot, 2.5 feet. And it, just one stem, and it had a whole bunch of little white blossoms on it.
Flowers.
Flowers, right.
Do they do that once in a while?
They do. If they have a suitable environment, if they're healthy plants, they definitely will, yes.
And they're pretty awesome flowers, and it doesn't happen regularly. So once again, you must have a good green thumb.
Well, I don't know. I used some miracle rule in there. But, anyway, okay, well, thank you.
All right. Thanks a lot for your call, Gary.
Bye.
Bye. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. It's Horticulture Day on Talk of Iowa, and Lynn is on the line in Ames next. Hi, Lynn.
Hi there.
Hi, what's your question?
Well, I believe I have soil gnats. They're little black flying things. They aren't too smart, and they don't fly too well, but I can't get rid of them.
You've tested their intelligence?
Yeah, they just kind of flop around. But I've tried they said put red wine in a glass and make a funnel. They said do the dish detergent and water in a spray bottle. And I still have them, and I think, would they have caused me to lose my hibiscus and my hydrangea and my ivy this winter?
Well, now they could be fungus gnats.
Ah, okay.
That's a possibility. They're typically associated with decaying organic matter.
Okay.
And if you keep your potting soil too moist or too wet, that may actually be encouraging them. So our typical recommendation would be to maybe cut back on the frequency a little bit to allow the potting soil to dry out a little bit more thoroughly before you water, but then go ahead and water thoroughly when you do, but to water less frequently.
Okay, so the spray with the water with the detergent in it was actually doing the wrong thing.
Well, it probably wasn't doing a whole lot as far as controlling them. So your cultural practices probably are the best way to control them. The other thing you might want to do is maybe take a knife and very carefully kind of loosen the surface of the potting soil to kind of let it dry out nicely.
Okay.
Otherwise, it may tend to keep the potting soil a little bit too wet. So you want to encourage the potting soil to dry out nicely.
Okie doke. Thank you.
All right, Lynn. Thanks a lot for your call.
Bye-bye.
Bye. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. And this is from Lisa in Iowa City, a question we get a lot. I've got bulbs I didn't get planted last fall, tulips, daffodils, crocus. Can I salvage them?
Boy.
If they haven't shriveled.
Boy, at this time, it's not very good because they tend to, over time, gradually lose their viability. They kind of dry out. And so it's not a very good situation. I guess the ones that I would probably try to save would be the daffodils. So if the bulbs are basically still solid and firm, if they're not all shriveled up, then basically what I would do is as soon as the ground is workable, I would get them in the ground. And hopefully they will send up foliage. And if they do, they have survived. And hopefully in a year or two, they'll recover and start to bloom again. The tulips are not nearly as vigorous. And so I think even if they survive, they may never bloom again just because they go downhill very rapidly.
All right. So it's probably not worth the effort to even see.
Well, I would try the daffodils. If they're still solid and firm, the other ones I'd probably tend to discard.
All right. This is from Sam. You talk about how gentle you need to be with your transplants once you put them outdoors. How gentle do you need to be with greenhouse-grown sets?
Well, if they're in the greenhouse, then again, I do the same thing as far as hardening them off because they haven't been exposed to the outside. Now, if you buy them from a garden center where they're already outside, then they've been toughened up. But if you buy them from a greenhouse, again, they should be hardened off for a few days.
All right. This is Ken in Ames. Hi, Ken.
Hi, hello.
Hi, what's your question?
Well, it's about ever-bearing strawberry plants. I think they're Ozark Beauty, I believe. I planted them last spring, and I didn't read the directions soon enough. They got extremely thick, and I'm wondering this spring what I should do with them. Should I thin them out? They're just really thick. It's just a mat.
Yeah, I would probably thin them out. I would just go out there maybe in mid to late April and do some thinning. With the ever-bearing strawberries, They do better if you try to maintain them as single plants, and where you basically remove any runners that form by either pinching or cutting them off, because you want them to put all their energy into flowering and fruiting. And if you allow them to produce runners, they won't produce as many flowers.
So I bought 25 plants, so I really should have really almost just kept it at 25.
Right, right. That would be ideal, yes.
I see, yeah. And I've done more reading on since then, and it kind of sounds like maybe June bearing is a better way to go.
Well, there are different types of strawberries. We have the June bears are the most common. Then we have the everbearing, so-called everbearing. They're really not everbearing. They tend to produce in June and maybe in late summer. A newer type are the day-neutral strawberries, and they tend to be more everbearing, and there's some nice varieties of that type.
All right. Good luck, Ken. Thanks a lot for your call. We're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment to answer more questions at 866-780-9100 or send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. With me, Iowa State University Extension horticulturist Richard Duran and Cindy Haynes, Associate Professor of Horticulture at ISU. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today on Talk of Iowa. And with me, Iowa State University Extension horticulturist Richard Duran, Cindy Haynes, Associate Professor of Horticulture at Iowa State University. They are here to answer your questions about the plants in your life. You can give us a call at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And let's go back to the phones, and next up we'll take Sue in Des Moines. Hi, Sue.
Good morning.
Hi, what's your question?
I'm having to redo my backyard. It was all in garden, and we were feeding a critter that we did not want and could not shoot because we're in the city limits. And so I thought I've used creeping thyme in the front. I want something mm-hmm. barefoot friendly but not grass. So I'm not sure creeping thyme, this is a full sun area for the middle and shaded morning on one side and shaded afternoon on the other side. So I've got a little bit of a difference.
Right. And so you're looking for another ground cover that you want to use?
Yes.
Okay. So if creeping thyme sounds like it's a pretty good option. Other options might be something like barren strawberry. It looks like little strawberry leaves. It's another low mat, and it will go anywhere from almost full sun to full shade. Though I like it a little bit better when it's in at least a little bit of shade. Vinca might be another option, too. It's another low-growing kind of ground cover that spreads. And both of those I think you could still walk on, just like you could on the creeping thyme. Richard, did you have any other? Okay.
Vinca tends to be a little hard on the if you're not used to it.
Yeah, it's more of a vine type. The barren strawberry is going to be a little bit more like, you know, the thyme and rooting at different places, so it's going to be a little bit softer. It's not probably going to be as soft as creeping thyme, and it's not going to release that wonderful fragrance. So
okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay,
all right.
Thank you.
Yep, thanks a lot for your call, Sue. And nice to think about anything growing from the ground again.
I know. With fragrance, too.
Yeah. Derek is on the line in Iowa City. Hi, Derek.
Oh, hey. How are you?
Good. What's your question?
Oh, I'm growing chili peppers. I was wondering what the best material to put them in to start them. And another question, too.
Okay. I would start those indoors about 8 weeks before the intended outdoor planting date, so it's a little bit early yet. As far as a germination medium, I would use Jiffy Mix. And then right. Okay. And you can find that at most of the big retailers, big box stores. Okay. Once they germinate, I'd probably use, transplant those into eventually a potting soil, like Miracle-Gro potting soil should work fine.
Okay. I guess the other question is, in this garden, we have an awful lot of Canadian thistles, and is it my understanding that you need to dig down to get the roots out if you're doing it organically?
Oh, boy. That's really hard to control because it has such a deep, extensive root system. Right, your options are limited. Basically, you're gonna have to be extremely persistent, because every time that you try to dig it up, you're destroying part of that root system, but the remaining portion will send up new growth within a few weeks, and so you have to keep at it repeatedly. I guess covering the area maybe with a tarp or something might be another option, possibly. But you're going to have to be persistent. This might be a chore that you do for maybe a year or two to get rid of it.
Or a hobby.
Okay.
A hobby, yes.
It becomes a hobby. You're right.
Yeah, it seems like it. Yeah, it's just if you're pulling them consistently, no matter what, it's going to send up more. But if I continued and I get every single one of them, and then let's say that at the end of the fall, I got every one of them, is it going to be coming back next year?
Well, I would guess that it would, because you probably haven't gotten it all, because these can go down.
But he doesn't want to pull them anyway. He wants to dig them, right?
He wants to dig, right. You want to dig them up as best you can.
Well, that's what I said. Yeah, okay. I do need to dig
And remove all those roots that you can find, all the plant parts you can find, get rid of them, destroy them. But you're not going to get them all. And those that remain will sprout within a few weeks, and you just keep at it. You basically keep on digging them up.
And if he digs them up when they're small, does he have a better shot, like jumping on it right away?
Right.
Obviously, you don't want to let them seed, flower, and go to seed. But
as soon as they sprout again, you want to dig them up. Because if they come up and you neglect them and they survive for several weeks, they're able to manufacture food and develop a bigger root system again. So you've kind of lost what you've done. So you have to keep on doing it. As soon as they sprout, you dig them up again.
All right, Derek. Thanks so much for your call. 866-780-9100 is the number. Matt is on the line in Ames. Hi, Matt.
Hi. I was calling about parsnip. And the last few years, I've tried to grow parsnip in my garden. I have not been able to get good germination or any germination in two of the years. And last year, after two failed plantings of seed bought from Lowe's there in Ames, I ordered some online and I got about 50% germination. I was just looking for some tips to get better success with that type of a crop.
Well, they're kind of like a carrot in that regard. Make sure the soil is nice and fine and just barely cover the seed. And then we have a hard rain, that may make the surface kind of crust over, and if it dries, you're not going to get very good germination. So you may want to come back and maybe water lightly to keep the soil from drying out and forming a hard crust. That might help. You might maybe want to work in maybe a little bit of sphagnum peat moss into the row. That might help a little bit too, as far as keeping the surface from basically crusting over.
All right. Good luck with that, Matt. And let's do a couple email questions here. This one's from Nancy. She says, the last 2 years I've had a bad infestation of four-lined plant bugs. What can I do early in the spring or anytime to prevent them from eating everything? Somebody recommended an ammonia soil drench. Do you think that would help?
Boy, I don't have an answer for that. Four-lined plant bug. You may want to check with our entomologist, Donald Lewis, and see what he would suggest. His phone number is 515-294-1101, and that's Donald Lewis here at Iowa State.
All right, here's another email question. This one's from Christopher. I bought an alocasia, and then he put in parentheses poly, and it seems to be dying. The leaves start losing color and droop. I cut the dead leaves off. I've moved the plant around my room, but nothing seems to help. No sign of pests. Do you have any suggestions on keeping this plant alive?
Yeah, this is a little more difficult as a houseplant, but first thing is to find a consistent place to put it. So maybe someplace where it's getting bright, indirect light. So I would think about maybe an eastern window where it would get, you know, some morning light and then some, you know, not too much light like a southern window. And then consistent water. It's another one that doesn't like it dry. It doesn't like it wet. So if you can kind of keep it a little bit kind of consistently moist, but not too dry and not too wet, it usually does, you know, okay. They're really fun ones to have, beautiful foliage, and great one just to kind of find that. He hasn't found the right spot yet.
All right. So. This one is from Tyler. I have a balcony that faces northeast in downtown Des Moines. I've struggled to grow plants in the past few years because of the lack of late day sun and high winds. Do you have any suggestions for flowering plants that would thrive in this environment? I'm particularly interested in flowering vines or other plants that could climb up my balcony rails and provide a windbreak for my other plants.
There might be some annual vines that would work really well. I mean, I haven't seen a morning glory yet that couldn't survive almost any kind of conditions that you give it. So something, some kind of annual plant along those lines might work pretty well. Another one you might try would be the black-eyed Susan vine. That would be a good one that can tolerate a little more shade and is still pretty tough and durable. Or Love in a Puff, which is a nice annual vine as well.
Or possibly Scarlet Runner Bean.
Scarlet Runner Bean.
It's a bean, so it's a pretty tough little plant.
And so. Hyacinth bean, too. So both of those. So some annual vines might work really well, and they'd be beautiful and attractive, and they might provide just enough of a windbreak that he could grow some other things as well. Because of the shade or the potential for shade, he's going to look for things that are like shade loving.
Okay. I'm surprised that there are so many options. That's that's exciting. All right. Let's go back to the phones. Otter is on the line in Des Moines. Hi, Otter.
Hi. My long-term goal is to grow a willow that has the perfect branches for weaving. And to achieve that goal, I need to know what the best way to propagate from cutting so that I can start my own tree.
Well, willows are actually very easy to propagate from cuttings. All you have to do, basically, is go out, I would say, in March and cut off small twigs and basically bring them inside and put them in a vase or container of water, and they should root within a few weeks. They're just like a pussy willow. They root very easily because they have preformed root initials, and so you just bring them inside, put them in some water, and they should root. And then once they've rooted, you can go out and plant them either directly outside or indoors.
All right. Good luck with that. Thank you so much for your call. And next, let's go to Susan in Iowa City. Hi, Susan.
Hello.
Hi, what's your question?
I've been growing plants indoors or seedlings indoors for years, but I'd like to switch over to more energy efficient LEDs. Mm-hmm. Do you have any suggestions on where to get them?
Oh, that's a Chris Curry question. there are some places like Gardener Supply, or Farm Tech, which is in Dyersville. I do know they have a lot of lights and LEDs. So there's some catalogs out there that you can get them from. I'm actually seeing some LEDs even at some places like Menards as well, some of your box stores. So there might be some there too. The question or the thing you want to think about in the LEDs, though, is that they are sometimes targeted to certain light spectrums. And for plants, you really want to make sure that it has that targeted light for plant growth, which usually kind of is that red and purple wavelength, so it kind of looks purple when it's on, or pinkish purple when it's on. So look for something that, like I said, is targeted for LEDs for plant growth.
What I've seen, they all seem to be the screw-in type bulbs, and they don't fit in fluorescent. They're not the tubes like fluorescent fixtures.
Right, they're so more like that incandescent light that you kind of screw into those kind of fixtures.
I've got this great plant stand with 10 racks of fluorescent lights. Then you have to start over.
Yeah, I've seen LEDs that are coming in the longer kind of rod shape things as well, but they are just still a little bit different. So we're getting there. Okay. I'm not sure exactly on sources as much. Maybe if you want to contact Richard or I afterwards, we can. There is a greenhouse grower extension expert that might have some other sources for LED lights that are potential.
Okay.
So.
All right. Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. All right. Good luck, bye. Susan. Thanks a lot for your call. And let's go to a couple more email questions. This one's from Laysan in Ames. It seems that some of my houseplants are having white flies. What can I do about that?
Well, white flies are fairly common on certain plants, and they're very, very hard to control. You can use something like insecticidal soap, but if you do so, it's going to have to be done frequently. And when you do use it, try to direct the spray to the underside of the foliage because that's where most of them reside. In reality, you may never get rid of them completely, but hopefully you'll reduce their numbers. They're very hard to control completely.
All right. This is a tip from Dan in Gilbert. He says, I have a friend who's an organic farmer. One of his best tools for weed control is a propane torch.
Ooh, yeah.
I think if I had Canadian thistles and didn't want to use Roundup, propane flame applied repeatedly would be my choice. Of course, if you choose to go that route, be very careful.
Right. No wood mulch nearby. Yes.
And make sure that you don't have a lot of dry things.
Yes.
Dry plants
yes.
nearby as well. Let's go back to the phones. And Rachel is on the line in Mason City. Hi, Rachel.
Hi.
Hi, what's your question?
Well, I just had a tip for the person who had bulbs that she had not yet planted. And one year in January, when it was particularly warm, I went out and purchased several bags of soil, garden soil, and went to my garden with the soil dumped. Several bags, put the bulbs down, and then more soil, and they did come up beautifully.
All right, so you just made your own earth.
Right, right. But it was I had a window of opportunity in January and some bulbs that I had not yet planted, and it worked.
All right, well, very creative solution to a problem a lot of us encounter when we just don't get them in the fall. Thanks for sharing.
You bet.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
This is from Diane in Riverside. I've read that fennel should be grown in a separate location because it can cross-pollinate with other things in the garden. Is that true? Are there special considerations for growing fennel?
I have not heard that. No, and I've grown a couple of different types of fennel with all the other things and been just fine. So
I never heard of that either. So.
Yeah, no, so no worries.
All right, great. And this is our final question from Ron in Esterville. To germinate my seeds, I use a heating mat and grow lights on chains on shelving in the basement. How soon should I turn off or remove the heating mat after the seeds have germinated?
I would turn it off immediately.
Yeah. If you've got good germination within a day or two, you really don't want to keep it too warm. Like Richard said, you want to start lowering that temperature just a little bit so that the plants or the seedlings get a little stocky.
All right. And is there something I can do to prevent mold or mildew from forming on top of the potting medium in the trays?
Yeah. Typically, that means you're keeping it too wet.
Yeah.
And usually those are not going to harm the seedlings, but if you're keeping it too wet, you may get damping off, which definitely will kill the seedlings. So when you see that's a warning sign. You're keeping them a little bit too wet.
All right. And his final question, at what point should I start fertilizing the seedlings?
Boy, I would see how they grow. If they're growing well, they have good color, I wouldn't worry about it. If you notice the color is a little bit off, then I might fertilize and use a very dilute fertilizer solution.
All right. Richard Giron, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Iowa State University Extension horticulturist Richard Giron. Cindy Haynes, thank you.
Thank you.
Associate Professor of Horticulture at Iowa State University. You can get in touch with us anytime. Send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. I'm Charity Nebbe. This is Talk of Iowa. Have a great weekend.